Just to answer the question about how do we fund our research in this country and what's happening with it? We have in this country a levy system that goes via the AHD, the Agriculture and Horticultural Development Board, and everything is divided into sectors so that you have the cereals industry, you have the horticultural sector and so on, all split up, who have in theory their own boards, who have a defined strategy for the type of research that they're going to be looking for. And it is up to them, theoretically, the growers or the growers groups, because again, what they do with the horticultural industry, they will have the Brassica Growers Association, they'll have the Leek Growers Association, they'll have the Bulb Growers Association, who are tight-knit communities, know what the production is all about, and they will put forward a request for research on that particular problem that they've got. That will then get passed to their own local or their own strategy board, if you like, and again, funding will either be approved or it will be put out for funding to one of the establishments around the country, and some proposals will be brought up and some costings will be offered. So that's the way that it works at the moment.
Thanks for that. Right, there's looks of bliss at the back, so the microphone seems to be working at last. Gentleman in the green shirt who's been very patient, and then the gentleman in front, and then Lewis.
Thank you. My name's Eklund. I do organic gardening and ecotheology. I'm very surprised that you men weren't explaining and promoting small-scale ecological farming. Look at the studies that come out. Look at the IASTA report, the UN IASTA report, the UK Food Group, the Soil Association. Where do we stop? This wisdom, I've got here a couple books with me, one by a man named Schumacher, another by a man named Seymour. I highly suggest that you people read these. Certainly the students here, for heaven's sake, let's let them know these things exist. This wisdom exists, as it has for tens of thousands of years, in people in the soil. Small-scale food growers. Some of those slides you showed up of those prairies, those American-like prairies, I didn't even see a hedgerow. If you had biodiverse small-scale farming, you'd have some of your predators right in your own ecosystem. You wouldn't need these manufactured chemicals and what have you. I could go on, but it wouldn't be fair. But I must say I'm both shocked and disappointed that we didn't hear more about that sensible, sustainable, earth-caring, small-scale farming.
Yeah.
Can I just make a comment?
No, sorry, no, I will come to you, but I'm
Salah Fernando from Movement for Land and Agriculture Reform in Sri Lanka. Regeneration is an essential requirement for survival, obviously. If human beings don't regenerate after their death, again, then humankind will not survive. Nature, if it doesn't regenerate itself, it will not help survival of anybody else, anything else, any other life form. Now, human beings for very, very long have been trying to destroy the ability of nature to regenerate itself in the name of higher production, improved production, improved productivity, improving technology and all. Now we have realized that it doesn't work. Therefore, there are ecological problems, climatic problems, global warming, hunger increasing. World has failed to find solutions to problems of increasing hunger. All world leaders have failed. They are finding it impossible to find solutions to the whole issue of global warming and climatic change. They don't agree that they should start. Therefore, it is essential that humankind should realize that we have to restore and recover the ability of nature to regenerate itself. So basic principle should be that only those who have the possibility of restoring and recovering regeneration should have control over land, water, forest, and all other natural resources. This is an essential requirement. If your motivation is to extract more and more for profit, quick profit, then you will destroy the ability of recovery and regeneration. Therefore, profit-motivated extraction of natural resources and utilization, destructive utilization should be prohibited. Now, all agricultural research should be given a new direction to find out how humankind can survive while enhancing the ability of recovering regeneration. Otherwise, none of us will survive. How do we achieve this politically? I just want to give, give me one more minute. I want to give some examples that are happening in many parts of the country, very much in Sri Lanka, where small farmers, very small farmers, who don't have any capital for investment, they just allow nature to recover and restore. We call it ecological agriculture, agroecology, and they survive on it, and they survive much better. There are, at world level, there are reports. For instance, the UN Special Rapporteur for Right to Food, in his presentation on agroecology and right to food, he said agroecology has the ability to overcome hunger much better and much faster. So therefore, how do we achieve this politically? Hand over the possibility of controlling nature and resources to people who are not motivated by profit, but are motivated by the requirement for regeneration.
Thank you.
Primeiro gostaria de partilhar um desejo que tenho já há alguns anos atrás.
I would like to share something. I would like to share a wish that I've had for a few years.
Tenho um desejo de ter um amigo que seja dono de uma multinacional, de uma corporação que produz química.
You would like to have a friend that it works or is at the head of an agrochemical company.
Só por uma semana para ver a dieta dele, a dieta alimentar, de quem leva para mim.
Just to see, just for a week, just to see what it eats.
Tratamos a vida humana como se fosse game.
But because it's interesting how we just take a life or human as a game.
Acho que estamos à espera da última árvore cair, do último rio secar, para ganharmos a consciência do que tipo de desenvolvimento que temos que criar para o mundo.
We are waiting for the last tree to fall, the last river to empty, to really realize what the impact we have.
No entanto, também tem uma pequena questão em relação, se não me engano, acho que foi a segunda apresentação.
So it's got a question in relation to the second presentation.
Há um modelo sugestivo em que poderíamos ter um mundo viável se pudéssemos aliar os camponeses do setor familiar e as grandes corporações e os governos.
It was suggested that we could have a model to link the small farmers and the
Mas pela minha humilde experiência que tenho, é que esses têm agendas totalmente diferentes.
So they have agendas totally different.
A agenda de corporações é capital em primeiro lugar.
The agenda of the companies is to make profit first.
E podem trilhar os recursos, não interessa quais são os mecanismos, o que está em causa é o capital.
They're not interesting how they get there.
E os camponeses, a agenda que têm também é totalmente clara.
The agenda of the smallholder farmer is also very clear.
E tem um compromisso social, um compromisso de sustentabilidade, um compromisso de desenvolvimento sustentável.
He's engaged in, he or she is engaged in socially and in sustainable development.
Dos governos vou falar.
About the government.
Não vou falar disso. Portanto, eu gostaria de perceber como é que podemos criar esse modelo. Quer dizer, como é que esses dois agentes com agendas diferentes podem se encontrar?
So, how could those two agendas could meet?
Obrigado.
Okay, thank you. Right. So, if I heard right, agrotheology was it? Forgive me, whenever I hear the word Schumacher, I always have visions of Formula One. But yeah, absolutely, the small-scale issues. Our colleague from Sri Lanka about the sort of failures of the solutions so far, and about how you kind of bring together small farming and big co models. Who would like to dive in first? Who wouldn't like to dive in first? But
I'll make a couple of comments if you like.
I agree with all of what was said, sort of. Yes, Saref, you know, nice to see you here, and I agree with you. When you're talking about regeneration, and all I was going to say is something quite positive, is that we're running a couple of courses on regenerative agriculture up at Coventry next month. Flies over there about it, about high carbon farming and about sustainable water in the landscape. Everyone's welcome, and we're having a launch event with Hans Herren speaking, who is a co-author of the ISTED report, so there are flies over there about that. And you know, we can see that the term agroecology is a scientific discipline, a really valid scientific discipline, and it's also almost a belief system. It's a social movement as well, and we can hear from different opinions coming through here, and you know, it's just something that we need to sort of, you know, or try and work together on. And scale is a very interesting issue as well, because it's not one extreme or the other. It's not very small scale with everybody having their own piece of land, or very large scale. You know, there's all shades of grey, and probably if we were farming more sustainably, we wouldn't have the very big farms we have now, but that doesn't mean we're not going to have medium size, small scale, and it depends on the country, the landscape, and a variety of factors, and what kind of foodstuffs are being grown. So, you know, there's a lot of leeway and elasticity in the issue of scale and small, and what is small scale. That's just a comment, really. Thank you.
Martin, did you want to?
Yes, I'd like to pick up a little bit on this issue about small scale ecological farming. Perhaps I didn't explain it very well, but when I was referring to rice production systems in South and Southeast Asia, many of those farmers that I was supposed to be working with, you could argue, they were certainly small scale. And they were certainly ecological in the sense that they protected their fields with bums which had spiders on them, and the spiders ate brown plant hopper. And a brown plant hopper can take out a rice crop very, very rapidly. That indigenous knowledge, if I can call it that, is immensely important. And I think when we think about ecological farming systems, we have a belief system, but it's actually based on very detailed knowledge, which is often about the timing events of the crop and the cropping system. And it's undoubtedly true that many people in the world have been very successful in producing yields which are relatively low for their livelihoods. So what we see in the context of rice in Asia, rice is now described as a grain crop. Why is it described as a grain crop? It's because the farmer is not male, is not young, but he's female and getting old. Because the livelihoods of those farms has resulted in the fact that people opt to go to the cities for whatever life they get in those cities. So here is a fundamental problem that we actually have to address. How do you retain people on land? How do they get a an income, a livelihood. And I think it's very true of this country as well, that in fact we do, we, I wouldn't say we have graying farmers, that would be rather rude, but certainly I think reinvigorating it as a career is still, is an immense problem. In Asia, in India, for instance, which I am familiar with, people don't want to work 10 hours a day under the sun tending rice crops. They would prefer to go and sell their labour in town. What are the consequences of that are? Well, the consequences are, from at a government level, that that for instance, food has still got to be provided. So that promotes, if you like, wider enterprises. And that's, of course, where the supply chain comes in and big business comes in. I wanted to, I know I'm on a lot, but I actually am now starting to talk very intensely to some of the big suppliers who provide the food to the supermarkets. What is coming down from them is that corporate social responsibility is actually translating into sustainable agriculture. That's what they wish to say. Come on, let me finish this, please. Now, that sustainable agriculture is not sustaining their supply chain only. It's actually being able to add value to their product, to be able to say that it is actually produced sustainably. So we're talking fair trade, we're talking return on investment to the farmer. There is a move afoot amongst some big companies, not all, but some. And I'll come back as well to the funding side of it. The Research Council's UK, BBSRC, set up the Technology Strategy Board to actually address some of these issues. That Technology Strategy Board, actually the research that's asked for is driven by the users of science, not by blue skies science or that I might wish to do. So there is a change taking place, but it's slow and it's small beer at the end of the day. And it needs more interest groups to get involved to influence that process. But there is change going on. It's slow, it's small. But there is a change, and that's why we all need to be talking about this and understanding the complexity. And actually looking at all of the difficult options. Because they are difficult options. And we can't just, I would argue, that we can't just ignore certain things. Because I think we have to really, to use a rather common phrase, think outside the box.
Thank you, Martin. Right, okay. I'm conscious that we've got about a minute of the room left, so we're just going to have to kind of plough on until they come and throw us out and about. And indeed, my co-chair does need to make an announcement at the end as well. And I've got, I think at last count was about 8 hands up. What I'm going to ask you to do, if you haven't... I know you want to, but there just isn't time, forgive me. We could have done with about 4 hours instead of 2, I think. What I'm going to ask you to do, those who haven't spoken already but have put your hands up, is to make a 30-second contribution, and I will move on to the next person if you go over your 30 seconds, because I want all those that have put their hands up to have that contribution, and then we will kind of go from there and see what time is left. So I'm going to just begin with the gentleman there. Your 30 seconds begins.
My name is Richard Page and I work at Laverstoke Park Farm in Hampshire. We've invested well over £1 million into our research on our farm. And I would like to echo what the gentleman said down there. I'm absolutely dismayed at the lack of mentioning of organics and how organic production can help us in this area. We manage ourselves extremely well, and I would like to offer an invitation to all of you to come down and see how it's done on a commercial scale within those bounds.
I'm sorry there, because we've also been warned, I think, that we're overrunning our time. So, lady there.
My name is Rosalind Eccles. I'm just a member of the public. I've been to both sessions today, and there's been some really interesting stuff at both of them. This one seems to be like the more official parliamentary group session, and the content of both sessions has been very different. I'm wondering how much from this morning's session, which was very different, that was a much more organic community stuff, is actually going to feed into the parliamentary group as
very
well as today.
Thank you.
I was going to ask about soil of the night before.
Right, so it's all known before. Nice, snappy question. Gentleman, I think with green,
I just wanted to say that I don't agree with anything that Professor Martin Mortimer has to say. I think he's part of the problem. What we're talking about is breaking, thinking outside your box, outside the box of corporate control of all resources of the earth. So basically, I think that's what we're here today to talk about, and you're just upholding the system, and I think it's time that guys like you stop.
Thank you. Would you lay there with me? Yes?
I just, one quick comment. I'd like to thank the last round of contributors from the audience before this, because I think they brought in two very important parts of this discourse which was missing before that, one of them being food sovereignty and the other one being smallholder farmers. And a quick comment onto this, we've been talking a lot about rice production in India, and they recently just made a speaker made a comment about Indians who want to work 10 hours under the sun, and I just want to say they actually work 15 hours under the sun in the cities where they're having to migrate due to various reasons. One of them being that many of them can't continue to farm because of extremely severe water crisis problems which have happened due to introduction of crops like rice in dryland areas where there's a lot of traditional crops which are dying out. So I think we need to look into the deeper politics of why problems have happened. And
thanks ever so much for that, sorry.
Gentleman in green as well. Martin did have one slide that showed the traditional methods were the closest to ecological, the most ecological methods of farming, and the most similar to the natural biosphere. I'd like to ask how, well, it's probably too late, but how do you expect the people and the agribusiness that broke that system to actually fix it, as it was then broken?
Three points which we don't really seem to have touched upon to do with human. I'm a organic livestock farmer from Oxfordshire. We pay a lot of attention to stocking density. I think we just had to address human numbers, human waste, and human energy. Those three things.
Thank you. Okay, I'll have to be the last point.
I'm very shocked to hear the problem that's been created for smallholder farmers around the world by governments, by corporations, used as a reason to then say they have problems, therefore we have to solve them in the same way of absolute destruction. I think that's a disaster. And I'd like to know why we would have any faith in an industry which takes 30 years to work out that glyphosate is going to produce extra to give us GM. We can actually cause mass starvation.
Thank you for that. Right.